You're probably well aware of this fact, but your taxes are due on Monday. Whether you're an early filer or one of those folks waiting for the last minute, there's another side to tax season. It's a reminder that taxes are one of the main connection points between citizens and the government. And that carries an interesting possibility. Our contributing editor, Neil Milner, has a closer look at a potential link with voter registration.
Yeah, Vanessa Williamson did this study. Vanessa Williamson comes to this because she wrote a very interesting book called Read My Lips, which is a study of what people think about taxes. And she got interested in the fact that people are actually pretty positive about paying taxes.
I found that very surprising, yeah, by the way.
Well, probably because you're not, Bill. But anyway, what she got interested in is this point that so many people touch government and government touches so many people through taxation. So she decided to see whether you could use the tax filing process as a way of increasing voter turnout. And so what she did was to run a study in two cities. The study involves what's called the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. This is a program that the Internal Revenue Service offers to people generally below $55,000 in income, where the IRS has certified volunteers that act to help you in taxes if you come in. So she said, what would happen if we use this as an opportunity to try to get people to register to vote?
Mm-hmm.
So she got permission to do this in two cities, in Dallas and in Cleveland. And what would happen, they were randomly divided into two groups. One group got the tax information, and at the same time, they got voter registration stuff and said, you know, you can register here. The other group just got the tax information and didn't get anything else. And she finds that that made a difference, that those who were not registered, who got the voter registration thing, were over twice as likely to register to vote than the group that didn't, even if you looked all the way down the line to see if that other group of non-registers had voted. So you got 9% of the people who came in who had not registered but had the chance to register there voted, mm-hmm. registered, as opposed to only 4% of the non-registers who didn't register by the time the election came. Those are small numbers, but that's a pretty big difference. And the difference was even higher among younger people, I should say. Mm. Now, remember two things, and then just two other things to remember, that there are two issues in voter turnout. One that we talk about all the time. One is increasing voter turnout. Mm-hmm. Hawaii is a good example of the lowest voter turnout in the United States. The second one is that we know that from research after research that people who are poor are less likely to register to vote or to vote than people who are not. And so she here was working with a low income group,
mm-hmm.
and they in fact were more likely to register and vote. And the only test of whether this increased voter turnout, and it's admittedly a small test, is she sees what happened in the 2018 Ohio primary to these Cleveland voters.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
And she finds that even though they were likely to be of lower socioeconomic status, they voted higher than the average turnout in the election. 23% of them voted. The turnout generally was only 21%. And remember, you're talking about people who would be even less likely to vote. So she said, this has got some potential here, that it could be easily implemented, doesn't cost anything. It didn't interfere with the tax process because they checked with that whether it would take time away from the preparers. So she said, there's something here.
So this involves the IRS in terms of as a part of the federal government.
Right.
Voting so much in a location state by state. How does that work in terms of the interaction or coordination?
Well, that's very interesting because the states set up their own voter registration rules.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there are some federal limits to what you can do in terms of discrimination. And she said that's an issue because even in Texas has some pretty strict registration. They're sludgy rules. They interfere with registration. So even at this volunteer center, you had to give your ballot, your registration form to some deputized. They deputized people.
Right.
And so she said, that's an issue that states can decide it. But and it didn't really seem to affect the Texas turnout too much. But that's the counter side of all of this, that at the same time you have these things that nudge people to vote, you have these things that discourage people to register.
And that's, you know, different, looking globally, I mean, different countries do this differently. I'm reminded because Australia just called for elections overnight, and in Australia, voting is compulsory.
Yes,
it's, and it is other places as well. But looking at some, and you use some of the phrasing there of things that encourage people or discourage behavior, the nudge and the sludge, I think, as you characterized it. What, in terms of Hawaii, of lessons for Hawaii or potential applications?
Well, Hawaii has got a little bit of sludge, okay? And there are a few things that are changing that are making it easier to register to vote here. You'll have more time to do it. It isn't
same-day registration.
Same-day registration. So that, in a sense, it's fairly easy. But that brings up another interesting point, which is that It's not the fact that you registration is hard or that there are some limitations on it is not the only reason that people don't register or that people don't vote. Hawaii's situation clearly involves something broader than having a hard registration process, because it's not that hard. Hawaii probably has something to do with a now historical situation in which you have one party dominance, you don't have contested elections for the most part, and so elections take on a kind of low salience situation where people don't care very much. And just as voting is a habit, non-voting is a habit too. So that's a little cautionary thing here, that you can mess around and have all kinds of nudges in there, but that's not necessarily enough.
That's an interesting point, though, that some of those are behavioral modification, if you will, is really at the margin of sort of a broader issue. And again, bringing it back to here in Hawaii, as you say, it's not that the registration itself is onerous or is difficult as much as it's a broader point of voter behavior. Really.
Sure. And remember how much people thought that if you have you give them a day off and you have elections on Saturday, that would make a lot of difference. It hasn't made a lot of difference. Nothing really has made very much difference here. And now the question is, if you have mail-in voting, will that increase it a lot? And even that's up in the air, because a lot of the states that have mail-in voting already had high turnouts to start with.
But that's really sort of the next. We've learned a lot of things that don't work, I suppose, but in terms of finding for Hawaii in particular, that which does work or might work, we're still looking for things.
Well, this is really infantry work. People's expectations, people who think that the vote is very important and work in those areas to try to say that citizenship involves voting and all that, which is a good argument, they'll tend to underestimate the extent to which most changes that you try in voter turnout is infantry work, in the sense that it's small advances out of the trenches, a little bit here, a little bit there. And there's all kinds of literature about those sort of things. Some of them are not easy to do. One of them that's easier to do, involving shaming and social pressure, has been fairly effective, but that's hard to do at a kind of official state level. But there's no magic here.
No magic. Interesting links, though, in terms of voting registration and tax day.
Yes.
Who knew? Neil Milner knew. He's a retired professor of political science and contributing editor of our segment, The Long View.